You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Eleanor Milchan. She's in Tel Aviv right now, and she'll be talking to us about her work. Eleanor, thanks so much.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, Eleanor, I want to get into your work as a photographer and video artist, but to begin with, and I know you're working on a new project now. What is it that you're currently working on? And I know you also have small children and are busy. So tell me, what's happening in your studio now?
Well, the studio now has been filled, yes, with my own kids, but and also becoming a mother has made me look at children's book and how storytelling is being done at a very young age. And realizing also that a lot of children's books are not done using photography somehow. They're all done only with illustrations. And I've always used photography in a very abstract way and non-direct recording of reality, we'll put it this way. And one of my closest friends is an artist herself, a musician, composer, and we've known each other for ages, and we always said that we would work together on something, and we both became mothers about the same around the same time, and then this idea of doing a book together with her words and my photography came about. So I'm deeply in it right now.
And what does that mean, deeply in it? Like, what kind of a book is it, or does it have a message or a story? What's the structure of the book?
The storytelling is very poetic. I mean, I can't really like tell the story right now, but it's called The Invisible Book, and it's about how slowly and slowly by opening up to your own emotions, things become more real and beautiful, and you can actually like see them and sense them. But of course, like, you know, it's for young children, so we're telling the story in a much more simpler and more direct way. But I don't want to say the story right now. I think it's too much of an early stage.
Sure, but it does sound like very much kind of an artist kids book or children's book.
Oh, completely.
Book, because you're talking about ways of seeing, ways of thinking, perhaps imagination or our mind's eye, right?
It's completely an artist book. It's very, you know, it's not my kids are deeply in Thomas and the Train right now. It's not that at all. It's like a poem, and like all poem, children have a lot of room to interpret the story itself, but also the imagery. And I've not used Photoshop in my work, but for the first time, I've used layers of. I wanted to make it more. I had to find a way to make the story tell something about the unreal becoming, or the invisible becoming more and more visible. Now, because it's a book, you still need to come up with some visual images to talk about what is invisible or when the characters are invisible. So I've used the technique, and slowly, like basically the image are becoming, or elements of the story are becoming more and more real.
I like that. I think it's interesting to talk about kind of the book also in the context of artists with kids, because it you know, artists have kids, obviously, and I mean some
yes.
do, some don't, but a lot of them do, and it changes your practice or can change your practice, but also being an artist parent in a way, it changes perhaps how you see the visual material that your children are receiving, because like you say, you looked at other books, and one obvious thing was they lacked photographs, but also there's probably a certain kind of poetics that's missing in a lot of children's
yeah,
books.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I've been always more attracted, you know, and I've been trying like to give them more books that leave a lot of space to imagination. And even though they're very young, you know, obviously like they need a lot of visuals like to understand the story. But there are books that are very strict in their way of storytelling and the characters, and there are books that just leave a lot of space for them to just let their mind flow, and I hope this book will be like that too. Not telling too much and not showing too much and letting them invent and envision what they feel. And because I think a lot, you know, from a very young age, they can start expressing their own feelings, and they may not have the means to, nor the words, nor the, you know, the tools to be able like to draw it, but they can start expressing it and sensing it and start to understand what they see and invent, and pulling it out of them is only when you don't tell everything, when you leave that room for imagination, for poetry, for... You were talking about like artists becoming parents, and we all obviously forget about it because like we do our own work and, you know, people know us for a certain kind of work, but our lives do change. And when you become a parent, there's another facet of you that you discover for everyone, not obviously not just for artists. But I do think that in artists, it does open up even another layer of emotions and sensitivity that you thought you had, or at least it's a different facet that you didn't explore before. And I'm sure and my other work, you know, will definitely be affected by it and will have that layer encompassed in it. But it's been quite interesting, like to try and like, you know, tap in the world of motherhood on the other side and like try and like do it creatively. And that's not solely my work. It's in a way, it's another facet of me that came to be by becoming a mother. And so it's another facet of my work. It's not just my work. It's not
right. You know, it's interesting what you said before about the idea of creating a book also that has, as I understood what you're saying, kind of missing pieces or not a completely resolved narrative, so that there's room to move into the book. And that's so often not done, even though Dr. Seuss originally did that. And I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a new book out by Dr. Seuss. It was one that was never published, but it was completely done by him. And I guess it's okay if I give a little spoiler about this book. It came out this year, and though I don't have a child anymore, I'm a big fan of his, and I bought the book, and it's called something like Which Pet Will You Get? And it's about, you know, looking in a pet store and wondering which pet they'll get, and it seems very simple and straightforward. But the wonderful thing is they're overwhelmed with a decision about which pet to get. And at the end, when they finally leave the store happy, we don't know which pet they got. And
yeah.
So you're left with a wonderful question of, oh, my God, which pet did they get? But, of course, more importantly, which one would you get? And, you know, it's simplistic, but I think he's sort of the paradigm of children's books that are really engaging.
Yes, I'm very open, and also already, like, from a very young age, you know, let the child decide for himself and realize that he can have emotion, that he can decide for himself, that he can choose things. I mean, my imagery has always been a little bit abstract, and I've shown, you know, even the imagery of the book, like, to my own kids, and I don't tell them what it is. I ask them, what do they see? And if they tell me like something that's obviously, I continue with them in their way. It's their vision. It's not, I let them realize that they can look at something and just dream about it. I like when you look at clouds and you let your mind like completely go. I think like children are like that if you let them.
So to talk about some of your projects and maybe how you might be seeing them in the future, one of the past projects you did, which was in the lobby of the Times Square building, which is where the New York Times used to be, that looks gorgeous. I had never seen it, but these are installations on LED screens and that were quite expansive. Do you see that I'd like to talk about that a little bit in the context, maybe not of the books yet, but of your work, because those are both videos and seem very photographic. Obviously, the stills that I know of those images, because I didn't see them, are photographs, and then the stills and the images themselves look like photographs. But can you talk a little bit about how that came to be, and a little bit about that exhibit seven?
Of course, it's actually a video project, and I had done some private commission for the company, the real estate company, and the architect who did like their office really loved my work, and when he was approached to do the lobby of the Times Square building, he contacted me and he said, "Listen, like, I'm doing the lobby. I want you, like, to do something there." And we started, like, I went there, and I realized this is a place that, because it had the time, the New York Times in it for so many years, and it is an old building that was renovated, but it wasn't. It had, in the basement, the history. The printers had still been there, and you could, like, see all the structure downstairs of all the printing house. And on the walls, you know, layers of the time and colors that had gone by. And I said, I want to do a work that is about time passing, as if someone was looking, like, through a window from morning until evening, and that person doesn't move. Just the lighting and the way the colors change throughout the day give you a sense of time passing. So I did the video about the using the visible the colors, the seven colors of the visible spectrum, and it's a video that's in a loop. It's a 20-minute loop that evolves through the day with the different colors, and it changes just with the colors, shapes that you hadn't seen before, things that you hadn't seen before suddenly start appearing through the day. And
is the video actually that long, or is it the lighting in the room that's changing?
No, the video is actually that long. The video is very long, and Avishai Cohen did the music on it. And the idea was to give a sort of a window inside that lobby, that gave you a sense of nature through the movement and through the changes of colors. Because while time passes throughout the day, basically the colors are changing. The colors of the sun rays are what tints our reality. But, you know, we're so busy with our lives, we'd never, like, sit in front of a window for a whole, like, 24 hours. But if you did, you would suddenly realize that at dawn you can see certain things and not others. And slowly, as the sun rays change colors, certain things appear. And certain things sort of disappear, or they get more muted. So I really played with that. With that idea.
And how was that received? That seems like such an exciting exhibit and such a, you know, absolutely like the center of New York. How was that received? I imagine there was a lot of people looking at that and commenting on it.
It was extremely well received. There was one thing that was unfortunate by the time, like, that it was coming out, was that it was the economical crisis of 2008. A lot of people were going, like, through really hard times. So I think that, like, the spirit of New York was a bit different suddenly from that fall. And but it was extremely well received, and, you know, I still to this day have people, like, sending me emails about seeing that work and how it affected them. Or, you know, I've had even, like, when we were installing, children stop and, like, look at it and just trying, like, to understand what it was and figuring it out. So it was a great experience. And then I did several years before, I had done a public installation also in Times Square, but on the screens of the MTV and JP Morgan Chase. where I used two screens and I did like videos on them. So it was.
And that was an incredible installation. I mean, an incredible space to do that. How did that installation come about, or who curated that? How did you get that kind of those video walls? Is essentially what they were, right?
In Hebrew, you'd say a lot of chutzpah, which is a lot of guts to go and ask, actually, because basically what happened is I had a show, and someone from the Times Square Alliance came and asked me. At the time, they said, you know, we're trying like to revive Times Square and bring a lot of artists to do projects, and you can do whatever you want. You have to propose, and you know, obviously, we'll see if it works with our what we can do there, and but come up with an idea and let's talk about it. So I went to Times Square a lot, which personally I hadn't gone. It wasn't a neighborhood that I would like go about, but I learned to appreciate it and to realize really that it really felt like the center of the world when you're there. Like it's such a place of cross worlds and people coming in and out of the subways and all those huge screens. And some of them, if you really look, are like, you know, older, and you can see like the different layers of screens over time, like building one on top of the other. So it was quite an experiment. And as I was there looking, I suddenly saw the MTV screen, which at the time had a golden frame around. So it looked like a painting. I mean, it's not the videos that they were showing, but that's what their screen looked like. And I went and I looked, and all I saw was a lot of advertising, a lot of videos, but there was nothing artistic about it. So I actually contacted them, and I went there and asked them, like, it's calling for art, and you have nothing artistic there. Would you be...
Now, wait a minute. You contacted, because this is no longer the Times Square Alliance, you contacted MTV directly and asked them about their screen.
Yes. But
now,
we're
getting to the chutzpah part, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I like that.
I told the Times Square Alliance that I wanted to get some screens, and they were like, good luck about it. We're going to try and help you. But and I said that this, you know, try on your side, I'll try on my side. And literally we contacted the PR person and asked for a meeting, and she liked what we said on the phone. And invited us for, you know, a meeting. And I honestly thought that she would let us out after 5 minutes, but no, we stayed there a good hour. And she was go for it. And after I had MTV, I went also like to JPMorgan Chase. And once we had MTV, like they were much more enticed like to do it. And that was really a great experience. And I know after that there were a lot of other projects using the screens of Times Square that happened, luckily, because it's quite a challenging place like to do something, and it's a great vibrant place to do a public installation. I mean, I don't think you'll ever be able like to get such a space with so many eyes looking at your work, even if it's for a few seconds or a few minutes, the exposure is incredible.
And with JPMorgan Chase, that also seems like they'd be difficult to reach. I mean, I know you had just talked to MTV, but they also made a meeting with you, and it was the same kind of discussion, and they just liked the work and said they would do it as well, which means essentially they were donating some of their screen time to you, which is really extremely valuable.
Yes, it is extremely valuable. The Times Square Alliance had a contact like with someone over there, but they were like, I doubt, you know, they will do it. Who knows? But since you got MTV, like, you know, try. And it worked. I mean, also, like, they suddenly, you know, said, you know what? Yes, it is our time, but it doesn't cost them per se. Like, it's not that they have an extra expense, like, to do. It's more on the sheet. It looks as less coming in because they don't use the space for media placement, but it's not that they had to do an extra expense. You know, they didn't have to pull that money.
They may have actually even written it off, but as an advertising space, I would imagine it's a pretty valuable one. If the Times Airlines was to buy it, that would be expensive.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. They wouldn't buy it. I mean, only if a company is willing like to donate in a way that space, like for something happening and for getting like some PR, like for being involved in something like this, which they did. So for everyone, it was very valuable. It, you know, it wasn't a whole day of video, unfortunately. It was, you know, a few minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes throughout the day. So they still had their program going on. And for me as an artist, it was really exciting and really a great time to do it over there. And it was wonderful to work with the Times for Alliance, and it was really a great it was a great exposure, and really like challenging.
Of course. Yeah, go on. It was challenging. You were saying that the idea of putting it all together. You mean?
Yeah, because you know you have to work with all the technical issues that are involved with it, and all the parameters that each one is giving you. But it was great. And the Times Square Alliance was wonderful, like, to work with. I think they're doing, honestly, like, a great work. Like, they have revived that center that was purely commercial, and it still is very extremely commercial, but at least here and there you have a drop of a place to dream and to experience something that's different than pure consumption. And I think it's very important to remind people and to make them, you know, feel a little bit and think a little bit and wake them up from that crazy pace that you have in Times Square.
I think so too. Now, in closing, I really like those stories and especially that the way that all happened. Now you're working on this book, and there will be future projects. And I mean, we've talked about subjects that all seem to relate to, in a way, children or how people perceive. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but in the future, is there a dream or a vague idea of other installations or projections you'd like to do? It could be just an idea or a way of approaching it, but is there anything you're thinking about in that context? Not that's concrete and happening, but as a
yeah,
as
no,
a way
that, no,
that
actually,
might be
there,
approaching
there's
differently.
I have been in the last couple of years looking even more at, and you will be surprised, but at contemporary dance and contemporary performances. I lived in London now for like 2 years, so there were a lot of things happening. I'm in Israel right now, so there's like a great company called the Bacheva Company, which I love. And there's a lot of artists, you know, like everywhere in the world, and obviously in New York. And I've looked at it a lot, but I really dive in it, and I really, I'm really touched by and really in awe by the way they manage the dancers and the choreographer who put it like together, like manage to bring emotions through movement and through groups and through the music. I mean, it incorporates a lot of elements, and I would love to, and it's not happening right now, but I would love to do a project with performance and video. I think that combining all those effects like together is really interesting.
Eleanor, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been interesting hearing about your work and what you're doing now and the past projects and how they got done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.